This podcast is brought to you by Brett McMurphy's mustache. No reason. It just looks like a douchebag.
Menace to society.
It is Monday, July 22nd, 2019 for Patreon subscribers. Or it's Tuesday, July 23rd for the rest of yous. Welcome to our show. We are in our new studio, brought to you by Cameron Media, Menace to Society podcast. We apologize if it's a little echoey. It's a little empty in here right now, but we're going to work on that. Hopefully the studio will be done, finished this week, maybe early next week. Really want to make sure we get this thing up and running and ready to roll for the college football season and preseason so we can provide video content to everyone. Let's start this thing off like we've been doing the last couple episodes. Give me a little sports trivia there, trivia man.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is July 22nd, and on this day in 1994, this man pleaded absolutely 100% not guilty. Who is it?
94. I'm going to go with it's sports related, right?
That is correct.
It's got to be OJ then, right?
It's the juice, right?
Yep, absolutely. OJ Simpson.
There you go. Juicy juice.
He didn't do it. Right.
Here we go. Here we go. He's on Twitter now, so yeah. That's fucking great news for everyone.
He's got some scores to settle, he says.
Yeah, I bet he settled his scores already. Fucking clown.
All right, for the rest of yous, July 23rd, 1995, this controversial golfer won his first Open Championship by 4 strokes.
95?
My guy. It's got to be John Daly.
That's correct. It is John Daly.
Oh, this is bullshit. You're picking questions just to make him right.
Yeah.
If there's any more golf questions about John Daly, we know this thing is rigged.
That'll be the last one, I'm sure.
That is such bullshit. All right, well, a little episode recap. I want to go back and touch on some. I've got a lot of questions about it. We did the whole show, really, last episode was about the life of a coach, right? We called it So You Want to Be a Coach. And I wanted to break down for you, just did a little numbers crunching, just because a lot of people asked about it and sent me questions via email and DMs. And I wanted to break down just kind of what that means. So that was in season, right? That was over 100 hours work week in season. So really, I went through the whole year and broke down how many hours that means, right? Because you obviously don't work that workload every week for 52 weeks. I mean, you get about 4 weeks off a year, maybe 5 at the most. And it really made me think about it, right? Because my last year coaching, I made about $400,000, a little less with bonuses, blah, 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 400 grand, just for numbers' sakes, let's say 400 grand, right? On average, I think a college football coach at that level works a 4,000-hour work year.
That's about 2,000 more than me.
Yeah, that's about right. Or 3,500 more than you.
Yeah, probably.
So if I made 400 grand last year, and I was on the lower end, well, I think I was the lowest at Ohio State, but on the lower end of the, let's say, top 10 programs in the country, right? And so that would equate out to $100 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. For comparison's sake, let's say you would say a coach at Ohio State, you're in the upper echelon of your entire profession, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
So you are making CEO executive money for your profession, right? You're not a vice president. You are the CEO at that point. So compare some other professions, like a lawyer. The average lawyer makes $125 an hour, right? Now, my lawyers do not make $125 an hour. I wish they did.
Would they make more?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you're over. For a well-respected and a really good lawyer, you're going over $200 an hour, easy. And a lot of them work on flat fees now, so you don't even know how much is an hour. I guess it depends on how hard their job is or how long it takes them to do their work. But anyways, so the average lawyer, not the CEO lawyer, the average lawyer makes $25 more an hour than a coach at Ohio State, you know, hypothetically. A doctor, average doctor makes $150 per hour. Now, that's not the Ohio State level doctor. That's not the anesthesiologist at the James Cancer Center here in Columbus. He makes way more than that.
Yeah, way more.
But the average doctor makes $150 an hour. So 1.5 times what the coach at Ohio State makes, right? Now, I get the arguments. The doctor is much more important than a football coach. I agree.
It's 100% true.
It is 100% true. But ultimately, we'll get to why coaches are paid so well. in a minute. The CEO, average CEO, and we're talking about, you're taking into account every CEO, right? CEOs of startup companies, of small businesses, also all the way up to the CEO of Chase Bank, right? Or CEO of Cardinal Health. The average CEO makes $100 an hour. Not the CEO of the Ohio State level company, but just the average guy. So if coaching was more of a full-time job, like most of those jobs are, I don't want to say that. It's lawyers, doctors, some of the, and CEOs starting companies can work much more than 40 hours. But if you just said, all right, I want to work a 9-to-5-er. I want to be a 9-to-5-er. I'm going to work 40 hours a week, 2 weeks paid vacation a year. If a coach did that, making the same wage, they'd have $200,000 a year, right? That's their salary. So you got to take a $400,000 salary and cut it in half. It's like, yeah, that's $400,000, but they work twice as much as the average job, right? 9-to-5. Never mind. And here's why coaches get paid so well. It's the ferocity of the industry. It's compensation for demand, fluidity, relocation expectations. Because you may make 400 grand a year, but you also, to no fault of your own, be fired. I think back to, what was the coach's name? Mike Haywood. Do you remember that name? He was a head coach of Miami of Ohio. Very successful. And again, this is no guilt to him. Obviously, I'm one that believes in the system first and let due process. But just think about this situation. He takes the pit job, right? So he has a staff of probably, let's say, 25 people that are going to go with him to pit. So they leave Miami of Ohio. They're packing up their shit. They move to Pittsburgh. He has a domestic violence altercation. Again, don't know if it's true or not. And I haven't even looked at the details. I just want you to think about being this assistant coach. He has an allegation come out. He gets fired from Pitt. Or I guess they just don't sign the contract. So he doesn't get the Pitt job now. Miami of Ohio has already hired a new coach who's hired a new staff. So now you have a staff of 25 people who are looking around like, what am I supposed to do? I didn't do anything wrong. I did my job really well. We got a big time promotion going to Pitt, and now I'm jobless. And that, I get it. That's domestic violence. But if the CEO of Cardinal Health gets arrested for domestic violence, guess what? The CFO doesn't get fired.
Well, it doesn't get in the news at all.
No one cares. It's certainly not in the news. I mean, to be honest, he probably doesn't get fired unless it's something bad.
Exactly.
But if the CEO gets a DUI, he doesn't get fired.
No.
So that's why they get paid so well. One, the demand, right? Money is power. Say what you want about a doctor versus a coach. Money is power, right? And the amount of money that gets pumped into college football creates this high demand for coaches.
There's no TV network just based on doctors, watching doctors do operations.
No, there's not Operation Day with Kirk Herbstreit. Certainly no Operation Day. So you just look at it, a $500,000 a year coach, and how many coaches make that? I don't know, probably at this point, a good amount of the top tier programs.
Probably 50-50.
At a Power Five, you know, upper echelon school for sure.
Power Five, they all make that probably.
Nah, I don't know about them all, but the top 10 to 15 programs in the country, I'd say almost all the coaches are at 350 and above. So a $500,000 a year coach makes $125 an hour, which is, don't get me wrong, a shit ton of money, a shit ton. But you got to look at the big picture. That coach also might do a great job. Let's say he's the DB's coach. DB's locked down all year. Offense, horrendous. Staff gets fired. The DB coach did a great job. Where's his next job? Shit, he falls from Clemson. He can't, you know, there's not an opening. Doesn't have the connections. Ends up at Bowling Green with Scott Leffler. Great job, but now you're making about 70.
Right.
So you went from 500 grand to 70 grand. So that's why they get paid so well at the upper echelon. One, because of the competitive nature of the market. And two, because, I mean, it's flighty. You might be fired tomorrow. I do want to address one thing, and I want to bring something up. I don't know if people have seen it. I'll find the video. We didn't make it. It's not exclusive content, but I'll put it on Patreon for all of our subscribers. I want to address one thing that's hot right now, and I tweeted about it, but this whole Jim Harbaugh thing with James Hudson and mental health. I got to be honest, I couldn't be more disgusted.
What an asshole.
Well, It's like, one thing to, and I made this point on social media. They said, oh, well Michigan and Jim Harbaugh didn't deny the waiver. They just said, we're out. We don't want to participate. And as the point I made was, when you as the school that a kid's transferring from pull out and say, we don't want any part of this, you're denying the waiver.
Exactly.
Waiver denied because of you.
It's just insane. You want to help the kid. No. Like, it's just a kid.
But I think what's most disgusting is that he brought light to it and said, this kid, well, you know, these kids lie. Make it up. He didn't bring up James Hudson specifically. But where's the NCAA? Hey, NCAA, where you at? How do you sleep at night? This kid said he had mental issues. Who are you to judge that? If he says he was depressed, he was depressed. Can you prove he wasn't? I'm going to tell you right now, I'd be depressed. Playing for Jim Harbaugh if he's treating people like that.
Being up there in Ann Arbor. Oof.
But regardless, I want to bring up this guy. His name's Derek Greenfield. I believe he works at somewhere in West Virginia State or somewhere like that. He came in, this was probably 2 years ago, and spoke to our team. We had this program called Real Life Wednesdays, where it was all about real life development, right? And we brought in all these different speakers and educators and people to touch on every different topic in real life, right? It could be sexual assault. It could be financial freedom or finances or credit. It could be how to do a budget, you name it, right? So we bring in this guy, Derek Greenfield. He comes in and we didn't know at the time, but he comes to talk about mental health. So he starts out, it's this like nerdy white guy. He starts out like almost like spoken word. Have you heard somebody do that? It's like, it's almost like rapping, but poetic. And he
so like Hamilton.
Yeah. Just like, that's exactly, I actually thought it was Hamilton.
Oh yeah.
Ends up it wasn't, it was Derek Greenfield, but I was confused. I'm with you. So he goes, he starts, it's bizarre. He's saying funny shit. The players are laughing. Like he had this most unique ability to completely break down every barrier in the room, which if anyone has ever given speeches, and I've given 100, the first thing you have to do is drop the shield, right? You have to get people to drop their wall and connect with you. And if you can do that, that's what great speakers do. Guys that get paid a lot of money to speak, the best thing they do is they create an instant connection, right? And he did it better than I've ever seen anyone do. He dropped the shield of, you know, these 18 to 22-year-old college football players see this nerdy white guy. It's going to be hard to drop the shield. Instant shield drop. And then he proceeded to start talking about mental health. And you started to see where he was going with this. And all of a sudden, he's just rash about it, saying, stand up if you've ever thought about committing suicide. And then complete silence. He sat there. And after about a minute, everyone said, all right, bro, move on. Like, no one has thought about it. Then all of a sudden, one kid stands up. All of a sudden, three more stand up. And you're sitting there as a coach, like, I'm getting choked up right now. I'm like, holy shit. You're looking at the kid who stood up, and you're like, it's the most beautiful kid ever. I thought he would be, I mean, he seems like the happiest kid ever.
Yeah, you sit there, and you're like, him? Really? Yeah, wow. People are going through things.
So the moral story was, it was the most touching meeting I've ever been a part of. It was unbelievable. And I'm going to put the video up of, it won't show you who said that or who stood up or anything like that, but it just shows you how emotional it was. Because by the end, guys are crying. And I mean, you're sitting there. I remember Urban canceled everything the rest of the day and was like, get with your players. Like, geez, get with your players. And you go, and we went, and I think I sat and talked for 2 hours with my players just about how's it going, mental health, the pressures of college football. Because you got to understand, these are kids, man. Kids. So I wanted to talk about that and bring that up because if anyone has an organization or anything like that, I would encourage you reach out to him. He was probably the most impressive speaker I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of them. It was wild. So kind of just to reflect on the last calendar year with everything that's happened to me, I'm really excited about it. And here's what's cool. Here's what's cool about life. Here's what's cool about reality. I have read more than I should have. I still read more than I should. I have read more feedback relating to this show than I ever should. I also have read more content about me as a person, father, coach, etc., than I ever should have. But here's why. I care. I care a lot about what people think. I care about my reputation. I care about respect. I care about people's opinions of me. I also now care about putting out a show or anything else for that matter that's well done. That is beneficial to people because I'm a genuine person. When people attack who I am, my character, me as a father, I read it. I shouldn't. I know that, but I do because I care a lot. I have detailed my experiences in the past 11 months more than anyone would and will continue to because it matters to me. It all matters to me. Here's what has been so rewarding is meeting new people since everything happened with me. And you know why? Everyone I meet that I really get to know, every single person shares a very similar sentiment. They'll say after, you know, however many interactions, getting to know me, I just want to let you know, you're a good man. You're a great dad. You aren't what the media portrayed you as. To a person, they say that. That has been one of the best parts about my journey the past 12 months now, has been going back out in the world, interacting with people, and just being myself. And what's really cool is I'm operating under the best of circumstances. Completely an underdog. Completely, I have to fight a fight that no one does, right? You have to fight. If someone wants to start a podcast, you got to start a podcast. I have to change your opinion of me and let you see the real me and then try to start a podcast. Think about that. But it's fun though. I love it. The truth will always prevail. Reality will always rear its head. Anyone in the world can profess who you are, but ultimately, and this goes for a coach, a person, an employee, all that really matters is an individual's interaction with you, right? It's all about experienced actions. All about what people experience from you. Are you competent? All that matters is if people experience you showing your competence. Are you a good person? All that matters is, do people experience a good father, a good person? Because if you believe what's on the media, what you see on TV all the time, you're an idiot. Nowadays, it's all narratives. And it might be true, they might not, but how are you to know what's true and what's not? How do you believe that? So part of what happened with this show, what played into that, right? How it started. Because your social media posts, your words, your narrative, it does not matter. That's what I learned. That's what I learned from this experience. Leading up to this show, it was this unhinged, horrible human being. And so what am I to do? Well, I'm not an idiot. I'm going to play on that. All right, you think that's what I am? I'm going to just absolutely feed the beast. I'll go on Twitter and say I'm going to call everyone out. Which I did call a couple people out. But ultimately, it was about, all right, if that's what I am, that's what I am. Now let's find out what I really am. Come join me for an hour. Come listen to us for an hour and see if that's what I'm really about.
We need to call more people out.
Yeah, you're probably right. Ultimately, what I love is I'm a great father. You know why? Because my kids experience me being a great father. No other reason. No, not because someone said I was or because someone said I wasn't. Because my kids experience a great father. That's why I am. Anyways, just wanted to just talk to you from the heart for a minute. This has been such an amazing year, a learning year for me, a year of change. And I'm extremely excited for this next year. And I hope you're here for it. I hope this continues.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Sounds like the future is really looking bright. I look forward to watching the journey, but let's get back to kind of your past and what happened in your life.
Naturally.
I think it's interesting. So tell me about how you started your career. How was the transition from Gainesville to Huntington to Philadelphia to Columbus?
Yeah, no, it was really, it was quite a journey. I went through 25 months that were wild. I was a GA at Florida for 5 years and I got my first job in Huntington, West Virginia at Marshall University. I took that job 11 months later, took a job at Temple, 12 months later, took a job at Ohio State. So we did, 3 moves in 25 months across the country. But it's really cool, man. I had a lot of fun. I know there were some wild times. Like when I found out we were having my son, I was a GA and I was like, I freaked out. I'm sitting here, I make $200 every 2 weeks. And it was like, I was terrified. And I remember talking to Steve Adazio, who was like a mentor to me. Now the Boston College head coach and I was like, coach, he was like, hey, come here. What's the fucking problem? What's the matter? I was like, coach, I'm about to have a child. Like, I don't have a job. Like I make no money. I can't afford that. And he looked at me, he goes, Zach, you never can afford a baby. What are you talking about? I make a shitload of money. If I was having a baby right now, I'd shit my pants. I can't afford that. Yep. He's like, you can never afford it, but you find a way. And that was where the journey started. I found out I was having my son. Then all of a sudden I get a job. Doc Holliday got the Marshall job, called me, offered me a job. I took the job. I landed in Huntington, right? Landed, picked up, go with the head coach, Doc Holliday. We go to this booster function. I meet this booster. I'm talking about I've been there for 20 minutes. He's like, so where are you going to live? The booster asked me that. And I was looked at him. I was like, what? The only place I've seen is the airport and this restaurant. No idea. And he was like, oh, I just bought the house next to me. If you want to live there, you can live there. And I'm like sitting here like, well, this is a big time boosters with Doc Holliday right now. Yeah, I'll do it. So I move in. What he didn't tell me was they lived in this really nice neighborhood, and he bought the neighbor's house because it was such a piece of shit. The property value everywhere else was like plummeting. So he bought it to tear it down. He said he wasn't going to tear it down for a couple years so I could stay there if I wanted to. So I move in. This guy ended up being a complete bona fide alcoholic jackass. Like, I'm talking about drinking moonshine every night, like some stereotypical West Virginia stuff, to the point where I'm going to tell you two quick stories and then we'll move on. I don't want this to be story time, but one time he was over at my house. We'll just stick to the one story. That's how good it is. So he comes over, knocks on my door, 10 p.m., right? I have an infant child. I'm like, I'm trying to go to bed. And you could tell he's been drinking. He wants to hang out. So I'm like, all right, you know, this guy's done a lot for me. You could come in. We sit on the couch, watch the TV, whatever. I'm like, all right, it's time to go, man. I got to go to bed. So I kick him out of my house, right? Lock up, go to bed, wake up in the morning, walk out. His shoes are inside my house. And you would think, oh, he left his shoes, right? No, no, no. I remember his drunk ass trying to put them back on. He wore them out. But mind you, this guy owns the house. He has a key. Then I turn left. I go into my kitchen. Leftovers all over the counter. Pulled out of the fridge. This guy came back to my house, raided my fridge, left his damn shoes. So never mind how creepy it is. This guy was in my house while my family and I are asleep. Then I leave. I leave for work. My then wife texts me a picture of him. Passed out, no shoes on, in his driveway.
Oh my God.
There's certain things that happened there that was, and I loved Huntington. It was a great place. But anyways, not to take, just wanted to tell that quick story. And I've been asked 900 million times probably, who's the best leader you've ever been around in your career, right? All the way back from Florida days, moving forward. And I'll tell you this, it was not Urban Meyer. It was not Tim Tebow. It was one player. And the best part was he was not even a program guy. He became a program guy and turned into the best leader I've ever seen.
Is it Joyner?
No. God, no. No, certainly not. It's a kid that Buckeye fans know well, and really all college football fans should know, is Curtis Grant, the starting middle linebacker for the 2014 National Championship team. He was one of those players that spoke to you. And I have a video that I mentioned I'm going to share to VIP subscribers and all-in members on Patreon that will change everything you think about the 2014 year, about leadership in general, about passion. Not a podcast on leadership, not a formula with letters. It is leadership exemplified in a three-minute video. This video is worth $1 million to any college football fan. Curtis Grant transcended being a player or his value as an individual performer with his words, with his motivation, with his inspiration. And you have to experience it on a micro level compared to how I experienced his impact. It was life-changing, to be honest. I still talk to him to this day. He is one of those elite people that was not, and that's what made him a great leader. He was not a great player, a bought-in player, but he became all of that and more. He is everything about what is amazing about college football. And I would Google him, research him, hit him up, tell him he's awesome. Also, if you're on Patreon, I'm excited to share this video. So I'll put that up tomorrow for you. But here's why he was so great. He connected with the players. He was one of them. He'd been through the struggles. He'd been through the struggles in his career. He'd been through the adversity. He'd been a guy that hated the coaches, hated the program. And when he transformed and crossed over, people looked at him like, oh shit. Curtis is, when he talks to me, I know where he used to be. So I'm gonna listen. Because it's not like he, like Tebow was as elite of a person as you could ever meet. He really is. Everything you see on TV is real. Everything you see when he talks is real. His faith, everything about it. That's who he is. To the point where no one can relate to him. That's how unbelievable of a human being this kid is. So he was a good leader by example because he went so hard and he lived right. But when he spoke, people were like, yeah, but that's Tim. Like, they're like, what? Follow Tim. And you're like, yeah, but that's Tim. Like, he's just that great. Like, I can't relate to that guy. And that was his only issue as a leader. It wasn't his fault. He was just that awesome. But Curtis Grant, when he spoke, it was real. You watch these leaders and leadership talks and leadership videos and leadership podcasts and leadership social media. And it's like, oh, if you do this and this and this and this and all this conceptual this and that, it's like, all right, cool, man. Like, that's all. Like, get your gears turning, your heart pumping. You're like, wow, like that. I feel like I'm going to be a better leader. And then you walk out the door and you're like, yeah, nope, I'm not. I just listened to that guy talk. But when Curtis Grant spoke, it was real. Not phony leader talk. He spoke that real shit. And I'll show you in a video. It's unbelievable. So I just wanted to share that with you. He's the best leader I've ever been around at any stop, at any place, including coaches, because he had the ability to take a group of people and drive them. And it was unbelievable. All right, well, that's enough story time. Let's talk about some college football, right? We teased it in the last couple episodes. I know we already broke down the Big Ten quarterbacks, and I told you we were going to get to this, is kind of comparing that and bringing that to a national stage. I know this is not just a Big Ten audience or an Ohio State audience. So I want to talk about the other quarterbacks and what I've seen. I dove into some film work, watched some of them, and certainly because of the year I went through, I haven't studied every quarterback intently, but I've watched enough to know what I see and remember, you know, what I saw this fall, and also just looking at some comparison stuff. And the big question right now, I know in the Southeast, is Tua versus Jake Fromm, right? Obviously the Alabama Georgia ties there, and I wanted to bring up a couple things that I noticed as far as who's the better quarterback and why, right? And the one thing that I think is critical for fans to understand is they go to watch college football this fall and you go to watch Georgia. I think the most critical thing that Georgia has to do is protect Jake Fromm, because they did a decent job of it last year and he had a successful year. But he's the fourth best quarterback statistically when he's kept clean. No pressure, he had 134.1 QBR, right? So he's the fourth best quarterback in the country. The problem is, when he was under pressure, he was 66th in the country. I think one of the biggest things you have to do when you evaluate quarterbacks, right? Like right now, huge, huge debate in the Big Ten, right, is who's better, Justin Fields or Shea Patterson, right? Which I think is such a ridiculous debate, because Shea Patterson has a year under his belt where he showed you he can play really well. And Justin Fields, you have no idea. So the real test is going to be, all right, how do they play this year? And then also, how do they play against each other? Because when you have an epic quarterback battle like that, you know that that they are going to be on their A game, like, or their preparation will be at the peak, right? And you just look at it, and I think the one testament to this battle in the SEC that's going on is their head-to-head competition, right? When Georgia played Alabama, Fromm was the better quarterback. Tua completed 40% of his passes, going 10 of 25. He had like a 92 quarterback rating, where Fromm went 25 of 39, three touchdowns, no picks, Tua threw two. So, and he had 154 QBR. So it's like, who's the better quarterback? Well, I know this. Georgia didn't protect Fromm as well.
Who won the game, though?
Tua.
Yeah.
It's fair. Exactly. It's fair. But you look, if you look at the quarterbacks, right? And what's cool is you just compare the teams, right? Georgia had a much better defense than Alabama. Oh, I know. Everyone's going, ooh.
Really?
When it comes to defending the pass, they did. Georgia was the 12th ranked pass defense in the country. Alabama was 33rd. So Tua faced a better defense throwing the ball. Fromm faced a lesser defense, right? They had the same pass block efficiency, so their O-line was identical. Number 29 in the country, right? 90.8% of the time, they protected the quarterback, which is crazy when you compare these two teams. They're the two giants, right? The giant from the east, the giant from the west. They both had the same O-line performance last year. So the real question is, who's better, right? I'll tell you this. Jake Fromm's biggest issue as a quarterback is his throwing the deep ball. He is very below average throwing the deep ball. 98th in the country on deep ball efficiency. And that's very concerning. And we already talked about it. 66 QBR when under pressure. That's a bad deal. Under pressure, throwing a deep ball. That's two of the most critical things. So Tua is a much better quarterback from what I've seen.
Yeah, I still think Justin Fields should start
at Georgia. Should have started over Fromm. They beg to differ.
Yeah, I know.
The thing about Tua, though, is you look at, all right, how did he do against anyone inside the top 40, right? Because they paid, I think, four inside the top 40. 58% completion percentage, 6 of 6 touchdowns to interception. And what's, I guess, not confusing, but people see, oh, did you see what he did against Oklahoma? 24 of 27, 318 yards, 4 touchdowns, just diced them up. Oklahoma had the worst pass defense in the United States of America, 130th in the country. Like, wow, that's great, man. I bet he could do that against Kaufman, too.
Yeah, they don't play a whole lot of defense out there in the Big 12.
Now, what Tua does have is two of the top 10 receivers in the country, and Jalen Waddle and Jerry Jeudy. Jalen Waddle is the number four receiver as far as grade in the country. Jerry Judy's number seven. I'm sorry, Jalen Waddle's number seven. Jerry Jeudy's number 10. When you look at their performance grades, right? When Tua throws it deep, he has a 77% success rate to Jalen Waddle. Do you think about that?
So you're saying I could just go out there and play quarterback?
No, I'm not saying that. But it helps. It certainly helps them. Alabama's loaded at the skill position. Their receiver group's probably the best in the country. And so I think that's benefiting Tua. And obviously the one that everyone wants to talk about, that I know he's the best quarterback in college football, is Trevor Lawrence.
Sunshine.
But here's the other thing about that. So let's look at Trevor Lawrence. He was a freshman quarterback, right? That obviously had success, a lot of success. He's got hardware to prove it.
National title. Yeah, that's success.
That's decent. Now, I will say this. He also, talk about skill positions, he has Justin Ross, who's the highest rated returning receiver in the country coming back. I think he was like third or fourth in the country. And then he has T. Higgins, who was number 12. So you're talking about almost two top 10 receivers, right? So he's loaded too. But what he really had last year was the number 3 pass blocking efficient offensive line, and tandem with the running backs and tight ends. The pass protection was number 3 in the country. Much better throwing the deep ball. And here's what Trevor, the most shocking thing that I saw was when he was under pressure, he was like, I think top 10. He was a top 10 quarterback, QBR under pressure as a freshman. That's unheard of. And here's what that tells me as a football coach. That tells me that this is a kid that is uber talented. That's a true freshman, because he was like out of the top 25 when he had no pressure as his QBR. So what that tells me is this kid, when he's under pressure, all of a sudden he has to hit instincts. He has to get rid of the ball. The timing has got to be there. And he's operating off of just ability and instinct. When he's no pressure, now he's got to evaluate coverage, read movement keys, progressions, all these things that he still hadn't learned completely yet. He hadn't become an expert at.
Well, yeah, I think as a freshman, that's kind of expected, at least that he wouldn't be very good at the reading of the defense and all that stuff yet.
Right, but usually under pressure is when a freshman panics, and that's when they're far worse.
Well, it's just like JT Barrett. When he was a freshman, then Virginia Tech just blitzed the hell out of him.
And yeah, that's true. Very different, though. That was a style of defense. I'm talking about any type of pressure. This is any type of pressure. It could be a breakdown in pass pro. It could be just a zone blitz. But the fact that he was that much better under pressure shows that when he has another full calendar year to prepare to play college football, this kid's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be wild to watch.
So I think he's the best. I don't think. He's got to be the best quarterback in the country, right? No. Got to be. I'll tell you the other one that I know I had a lot of conversation with. I talked to a couple current players about it because it was a big conversation in Buckeye land when Dwayne Haskins was going to leave. They talked about this guy, Justin Herbert, out of Oregon, right? And when he announced he was coming back, it was a foregone conclusion. Dwayne was leaving, though Dwayne was leaving anyways. But they talked about him, and it's like, I didn't see it. And people sometimes take NFL projection or Mel Kiper's word, and they say, oh, this kid's a great player. It's like, where? He graded out below 70, which this is on a 0 to 100 scale, right? So a D in 6 of his games, almost half of his games. He graded out horrific. I mean, they lost to Arizona. He had a 29.1 grade.
Yikes.
68th in the country in adjusted completion percentage. And what that means is when he throws the ball, should it have been caught, right? If the guy drops it, that doesn't hurt. Don't hurt the quarterback for that. 72% completion percentage adjusted. 68th in the country. 33rd deep ball. 107th QBR under pressure.
Well, that's in the Pac-12 also, which they are known for their defense, right?
Yeah, I don't think they play. I think it's all on air, isn't it?
It's a glorified 7-on-7.
Similarly, I hear a lot about the kid at Texas, Sam Ellinger, right? I watched 3 games in the last week. 4 of his last 6 games, he was under a 70 grade. He had a great first half of the year, but the second half of the year was terrible. Now, he can play. He had a pretty high completion percentage adjusted. The issue that Texas has is they can't protect him. 88th in the country in pass blocking. So they got issues in Texas they need to fix in the protection world for that quarterback. The one who's not talked about a lot, like I read USA Today's top 10 quarterbacks in the country, right? And Sam Ellinger was on there. He's not even the best quarterback in the state of Texas. The number one quarterback in the country last year, when it came to to grades, right? Their grades, the number one quarterback in the country was Mason Fine, the kid at North Texas. And the best part was USA Today didn't even put him on the list. He had the number 2 adjusted completion percentage in the country, the number 4 deep ball quarterback in the country. I mean, everything he did was top 10. So you want to talk about a dark horse or a candidate for awards at the end of the year? Watch out for Mason Fine.
Well, and also, he's out of a small school, which seems to be a big trend in the NFL. They love to take those, big NFL prospect quarterbacks that come out of your Wyoming or North Dakota State or North Dakota or whatever, Carson Wentz's of the world.
Yeah, for sure. And I read at Big Ten Media Day, Scott Frost, and I'm going to keep pumping this kid and this, because I think Nebraska's going to explode this year. They asked Scott Frost about his team and his quarterback, and I know it's 90% of it's coach speak, but I think he's legitimate. He said he would take Adrian Martinez over any quarterback in the country. Now, I disagree, and I like I said, I know it's coach speak, but that kid's about to have a monster year.
Well, yeah, you can't really come out and go, yeah, I'd take Adrian over everybody but, like, Justin. Trevor Lawrence and Tua, but other than them, yeah, I'd take them.
Yeah, right. Right, like I said, I know it was coach speak, but I'll tell you, and I like Shea Patterson. I went back and watched a couple games of his. Obviously, I watched a number of them live, or not live, but I watched a number of them this past fall. Not evaluating him as much, but I think Shea's a really good player.
Do you think that a lot of his success will come down to his mental state?
No, I think a lot of his success is going to be how they protect him. He was a top 10, top 15 quarterback when there was no pressure, when he wasn't pressured. So they have the skill. I mean, they have it at Michigan. They have DPJ, Donovan Peoples-Jones. They have Tyreek Black. They have the skill players at Michigan. It's going to be a matter of, can they protect Shea? And if they can, because Don Brown's going to have the defense rocking. So I think he's going to have a hell of a year. The other kid I really loved was the KJ Costello kid out of Stanford. He was, you talk about a deep ball thrower. Woo. He was, I think, 6th in the country throwing deep balls.
So, the one that I saw that you haven't really touched on and I think will be really interesting is Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, because Jalen Hurts reminds me of, I don't want to say JT.
Tua?
No, it certainly doesn't remind me of Tua. Jalen Hurts, the problem is he can't throw the ball at a high level. He's an athletic quarterback. He's almost Tebow-esque, right? Great college player, but he can't throw the ball for that position. And Oklahoma, I don't know if you've watched, but they had elite throwers. They were athletic. Baker was athletic, right? They were athletic, but they could throw the ball really well. And so it'll be on Lincoln Riley. Can he adjust that system to Jalen Hurts' strengths? Which obviously he will. He's one of the best offensive minds in college football.
Well, at least they play in the Big 12 where there's no defense also.
Yeah, it's pretty much anything west of the Mississippi River. They stop playing defense and just kind of do it all on air. It's wild. I don't know why they get that advantage, but... So those are the quarterbacks that I saw and really, really liked, just watching a couple games each. Justin Fields is the one that will be interesting to see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he comes out the first couple games. We're going to dive into that season breakdown for Ohio State here in a minute, because I think that's the big question mark. Ohio State has been relevant to the end of the year conversation every year. And the question is, will they be this year? And it falls on Ryan Day and staff's ability to get Justin Fields to experience success and have success so that he can catapult it out into a successful year. And we'll dive into that schedule right now. So we want to break down Ohio State's season, just kind of go through it, what we think, what I think of the games, the trap games, the potential tough atmospheres. So we'll dive right into it.
So Ohio State goes, obviously the Ryan Day tenure starts August 31st against FAU. Lane Kiffin coming to town.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be a walk in the park, but I mean, Ohio State will definitely come away with a win. It's a good season starter. I want to dive into the biggest concern I have in the 2019 season is week two. When Cincinnati and Luke Fickell come to Columbus, that is a dangerous game. And I'm not ready to call upset alert. We'll see how they're in training camp and how they play week one and how Cincinnati does the same. But a noon game at home against Cincinnati is a watch out game.
Well, no matter what, the quarterback is going to be very inexperienced for Ohio State. So
here's what you have. You have, and I've talked about in the previous episode about Luke Fickell and his prowess in recruiting and really finding those undervalued recruits and that become big time players. And that's the niche at Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And he's been there for whatever, 2-3 years, and he's been able to recruit the kids that he wants to recruit. And you just look at what they did last year. I mean, they were 11-2, beat Virginia Tech in the Military Bowl. And I mean, they're coming back. Their top two running backs are returning. Their 2017 rushing leader was injured last year, and their 2018 rushing leader, both are back. So their top two running backs are returning, and they have the 15th ranked rushing offense in the country. And that's concerning because of Ohio State's linebacker issues, right?
True.
And if Luke knows how to do something, it's how to run the football, because he's a defensive coach, and that's Alabama-esque. They will run the ball really well.
Well, if Ohio State hasn't shored up the linebacker position, that could be a real big problem for them.
And I think they will shore up the linebacker position, but that's an early test for that linebacker group. And they're going to have to rely on their D-line and really their safety play to get involved to stop that rushing offense. And Cincinnati did lose their stud receiver, a South Florida kid. I recruited a little bit, Khalil Lewis. So they lost their stud. I don't know that he was of note. Like, the secondary to Ohio State would have had a problem with him had he returned. So I think their secondary will match up really well with the skill at Cincinnati. They're returning, I would say, 2.5 of their O-line, 2.5 out of 5, because their center started several games for them. But the biggest thing, they added the transfer from Michigan that we discussed, James Hudson, and right now he's appealing the NCAA's denial for his eligibility. But that would be a huge, huge impact on the O-line if they could get that done.
I think it'll be a big test for those big D linemen in the middle.
Yeah, it will, but I have a lot of confidence in those interior D linemen. I'm telling you, BB Landers is going to be a stud. He played really well last year. And then you have the slew of Davon Hamilton and Haskell Garrett and Teron Vinson and Tommy Togia. They're going to be young, but they'll be in Ohio State form by season start. I think Cincinnati will definitely struggle throwing the ball against Ohio State.
Yes.
But Cincinnati, the biggest, it's scary because they have a really good rushing attack, and then they have an elite defense, right? They finished last year with the 8th scoring defense, 11th in total defense in the country. 6 of the 7 on the back end are returning starters. 3 of the top 4 corners are returning. They're young and inexperienced on the D-line, but they have 2 impact players in Perry Young, the linebacker, and James Wiggins, the safety. So I'd watch out. And I will tell you this, the one thing that's going to happen, and this is what makes me nervous, is Luke Fickell and staff will create chaos for Justin Fields. They're going to blitz the hell out of him, stop the run game with scheme, and make him throw it to win. The biggest question is going to be in that game, will Justin Fields be able to handle adjusting protections and delivering the football on time?
So it sounds like it's going to be a lot like JT against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's very similar, right?
Similar to that.
Game two, and I mean,
very similar.
Very similar. That's a scary game. I looked at the whole schedule, and that's the one that terrifies me. There's 2 other ones that I think are high, on high alert, but that one, being early and being Justin Fields, a rookie quarterback, and just the whole landscape of that game is scary to me. And depending on how that game goes, the next game is not a walk in the park. At Indiana at noon on September 14th. Indiana is a unique place to play. We struggled there every time we went when I was at Ohio State. And the reason being, the atmosphere sucks. Ohio State players innately, no matter what you do, they have this inferiority or superiority complex against Indiana. Like, it's just Indiana. And the atmosphere doesn't help. And every time we went and played there, we came out dead. The players were just not playing with the juice they usually played with. I'm telling you, that's a scary one too. Being an early game like that, players got to wake up, get their shit going. Ryan Day and staff have to do an outstanding job getting that team ready to play that game.
They could easily come out just dead.
easily
not wanting to be
When you play in front of, you know, 15,000 people or whatever in that stadium, and there's nobody there, and it's noon, it's early.
Yeah, that never happens. India, it'll be a sellout. It'll be
Ohio State.
One of my best friends in coaching played at Indiana, and he said when Ohio State played at Indiana, that was known as Indiana's picture day. Because the stadium would be full of red.
Yeah.
It was all Ohio State fans, but it looked like the place was sold out with Indiana fans.
Yeah.
So it'll be a sellout, and it'll be Ohio State fans. But it's just the atmosphere in general is not conducive to a motivating factor. I mean, especially at noon.
Especially at noon, because so they don't have that beer in them.
Yeah, right.
The fans aren't really juiced up yet.
Right. And so then they follow up. That's a two-game scary little stint there. Then they follow up with Miami of Ohio at home. Should be no problem. And then if they can come out of that 4-0, a huge test on the road on September 28th against Nebraska. I've talked about it several times. I think Nebraska is going to be the most improved team in the Big Ten. I expect this year to be the year they have the ever-anticipated Scott Frost jump in production on the field. It's going to be they have Adrian Martinez. That is going to be the true test. If Ohio State can come out 4-0 into that game at Nebraska, I'd imagine Nebraska will be 4-0, and that'll be the matchup that will be the pivotal game in the season. Because if they win, they'll ride the momentum. You'll see a spike. If they don't, they got another one coming up the next week.
Now, that one isn't scheduled for a time yet, is it?
No, there's not a time scheduled.
It could be a night game.
Well, yeah, both teams are 4-0. That's a night game.
Yeah,
especially if Scott Frost is... offense is popping. If Ohio State beats Cincinnati and Indiana handily by chance, that's going to be a huge matchup.
If A Magic is looking good,
A Magic. Oh, Lord. So let's, depending on how that game goes, then they got to follow that up the next Saturday with Michigan State at home. I expect Michigan State to be very, very salty and strong after coming off a horrible year last year. They have a bunch of guys returning. Mark D'Antonio certainly will not take the performance last year. As gold, they have probably had a brutal offseason, and they switched up their offensive staff. They're coming with more of a one back up tempo offense, which their downfall has always been that boring vanilla I formation offense that was efficient, but it just didn't put up a lot of points. And so the only caveat to that being it's a night game in the shoe. First night game in the shoe for the Buckeyes under Ryan Day, they will be juiced and the horseshoe will be rocking.
I hope it's not raining.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. The other caveat to that is there's a light at the end of the tunnel after Michigan State is a bye week. So those kids are going to sell out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if Ohio State can overcome the Cincinnati game and find a way to win that, can get over the atmosphere at Indiana, and then go into Lincoln, Nebraska, and beat Nebraska, I would say the momentum and bye week coming against Michigan State at night, at home, in the shoe, will vaunt them to a victory going into the bye week. So then... they will be 5-0 into the bye week. Now they come a two-game stretch. So you're breaking a season down, right? It's almost like a first part of the season, the five-game stretch. If they can come out of that 5-0, huge victory for Ryan Day. Then they got to go Friday night at Northwestern. Another trap game.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, playing on Friday night, does that change your week much? I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I mean, coming off a bye, you can adjust your week very easily.
That's true.
So it'll feel like Saturday to those players. They won't know any different. But it definitely, at Northwestern, is not an easy place to play. Last time we played there, they grew the grass like 6 inches to slow Ohio State down. I mean, they are what Northwestern should be. They're intelligent about it. I mean, they're going to find a way to find an edge. And if that kid, Hunter Johnson, is the man at Northwestern, that's not going to be an easy game, especially away. So it'll be a big test. I would put my money on Ryan Day coming off a bye week to have those kids prepared.
Yep.
So I would count that one for the Buckeyes.
That's their saving grace.
Yeah, the bye week. That bye week should get them healthy, should give them an extra week to prepare. They should be able to skate through that one, but probably not easily.
Yep.
Then to follow up with Wisconsin at home. It's at home. That's the caveat. Obviously, Wisconsin's quarterback situation is not great. So we'll see. That's going to be another test, obviously, but it should be one that the Buckeyes can win. Especially, again, because they'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. They have their second bye week after Wisconsin. So now you're seven games in. I think if you're 7-0, you are in the national conversation for postseason play. Then you come into the bye week, and they have a unique situation that happened to us at Ohio State a couple times. They have a bye week, and then they play Maryland and Rutgers before playing Penn State at home. What I can guarantee you is there will be one to two coaches on offense and defense during that bye week solely preparing for Penn State. Mm-hmm. That'll be the sole preparation. They'll have some auxiliary guys like Tim Hintons of the world preparing for the team up north. And the one or two guys on offense and defense will be preparing for Penn State because they will have no problem with Maryland or Rutgers. At home, both of them, I believe.
Yep.
They will have no problem with Maryland or Rutgers.
I would watch out for Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, Maryland won't be easy. Rutgers will. But they shouldn't. Coming off a bye week, no way they have a problem with Maryland. Not yet. No. I mean, I think Maryland's going to be on the upswing here soon, but this year is not going to be the year they can play with Ohio State.
I didn't think they'd have a problem with Maryland last year.
Yeah,
but
that's a good point. we're kind of taking that and throwing that year away because this year we have a very different defensive staff, very different dynamic, I think, and especially at home. At home, that should be a victory. So now they got Penn State at home, and I think that's going to be a big win. And I don't think that's going to be that tough of a win for Ohio State. At home, Penn State doesn't have a quarterback. They'll have a quarterback. But
well, someone will be out there.
But I think that's going to be that shouldn't be. If they have success prior to that, leading up to it, with that bye week and with two inferior opponents before, I think that'll be a victory. Now, the tough one will be coming off of that Penn State game and playing at Michigan the following week. Mm-hmm. And this is why. The Big Ten set Ohio State up to lose that game. They gave the team... So Ohio State's coming off Penn State before the game. Michigan is coming off a bye week. Michigan State at home, and then at Indiana. So the Big Ten, when they did the scheduling, they set Ohio State up to lose that game. Now, the real question will be, what is the culture at Michigan at that point? Because prior to that three-game stretch, they will have went to Wisconsin, went to Penn State, and played Notre Dame at home. If Michigan loses, let's say, two of those games, these issues that are at Michigan and the thin ice that their program is already skating on, will it start to implode? And then on the contrary, if they win all three, they will be on a high horse having Ohio State come into town with a new sheriff, and they will be feeling a different level of confidence that it's their time to knock out Mike Tyson, right? To unseat the rivalry champ.
Can they really have that confidence being 0-7 in the past 7 years?
Oh, come on. They had that confidence every year, but it was false confidence.
Fake confidence.
But it doesn't. Yeah. But if the momentum's right and Ohio State doesn't have that same momentum, Ohio State's going to come off a heavyweight bout and a week later have to play in the greatest rivalry in all of sport.
I feel like the Big Ten does that to Ohio State almost every year. Penn State or Michigan State is always the game right before game right Michigan. Before.
Yeah, this year they really set it up, though, because they do a good job of scheduling. You know, if Ohio State plays a home game at 3, then Michigan plays on the road, they'll put that game at noon so that both teams will get into their dorm room at the exact same time, so they have the exact same amount of time to prepare for the game. I mean, they try to meticulously calculate how to not give a team an advantage, I think, but the scheduling this year, they really, I guess they gave Ohio State Maryland Rutgers before Penn State, which is the only caveat to that argument, but it'll be interesting. I think the big ones to watch out for are Cincinnati early. That's going to be a real test, and then at Nebraska early, fifth game of the year, that's going to be a huge test. And then Michigan State will be no walk in the park at Northwestern Friday night, especially if Hunter Johnson is playing to his five-star ability. Watch out for that one. And then team up north. Those are the games that I'm most nervous about. And so obviously the next 2 months of preparation are really going to dictate how those go. But I think Ohio State is primed to have a successful year. It's going to be about those pivotal tests and the momentum that comes from them to see how it goes. All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 14. I just want to talk about the future of the show, this operation, this organization, and where it's going. We're going to continue this show, hopefully forever, but this is going to be what it is, right? It's going to be talking about real life, national college football, just kind of my stories, my experience, my opinions, and all of our input into that. But then we're also going to be launching two new shows at least. The first one is going to be a Big Ten Ohio State-based show. It's going to be more of a regional show, so we can really dive in deep on Ohio State and the Big Ten, the entire Big Ten, so that if you're an SEC fan, you can just not listen to that one. Or you might be interested. So that's going to be one. It's going to be a Big Ten show. Really excited about it. The other one we're going to be starting, I know you guys are fired up about, it's going to be your main deal, is going to be the All-Ohio Pro Sports Show. And we'll tell you the names once we
come up with them, really. but we're launching that one also. It's going to talk Browns, Bengals, Indians, Reds, Cads, the Cavs, the Jackets, you name it. It's going to be an Ohio Pro Sports show.
What about the crew?
And the crew. And the crew. We'll have a crew liaison, because I certainly don't know shit about that. And neither do either of you, by the way.
No, thank you. I'm good.
Well, we saved them. We may as well talk about them.
Did we save them?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
Save the crew.
All right, well, I definitely want to preview. I had a whole Burt McMurphy segment for this show, but I decided, you know what? My one-year anniversary of Burt fucking my life, I think I'm not going to talk about him today. So we'll bring that probably next show. Certainly not avoiding it. It's my anniversary. I want to really celebrate that anniversary properly by not talking about a man that is trying to become relevant or stay relevant. I also want to talk about the SEC as a whole, who I see on film that is, you know, the best in the East, the best in the West, and who can contend for those spots. Because the easy choice is, oh, Georgia, Alabama, and
it's Alabama, Georgia, yeah.
Alabama, Georgia, Alabama wins. So we'll dive into that in the next episode or two before preseason ramps up. Also want to preview the Big Ten and SEC, and I really want to dive into the Big 12 next with Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts, Texas, Tom Herman. We really want to dive into the Big 12 and the vaunted defenses out there. And also discuss, you know, the future of the show in a little more detail. Also want to announce, I think we have a location selected. We're working through the details right now, but we're going to have a live show, possibly a weekly live show, but certainly going to have one live show to kick off the college football season. So if you want to be a part of it or interested, make sure you reach out to us. Also, our store's launching this week. Like I mentioned before, our shirts for our Patreon subscribers are coming in today or tomorrow. Supposed to be today, but you know how sometimes UPS is. So we'll get those out to all the subscribers. If you have not sent us your t-shirt size and address, and you are a Patreon all-in or VIP member subscriber, send it ASAP so we can mail it to you. Also, we're going to have our Zone 6 apparel starting soon. Trash Talk line will be coming. And just make sure you have all your shit-talking shirts for the season. And make sure you check us out on Patreon. This video I'm going to drop today or tomorrow of Curtis Grant is phenomenal. I guess if it's Tuesday and you're not a member or a subscriber, it would be today. Also, reach out if you have any questions, if you have any information. If you would like to be part of our sponsorship or advertising platform, it is still open and available. We are finalizing details now. Contact us, sponsorship@MenaceToSocietyPodcast.com. That's the number 2. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked the show. Hope it was entertaining. Hope we gave you something to talk about at the water cooler at work or over the coffee. Do they still have water coolers at work?
I don't see them anymore.
Okay. at the coffee machine in the break room, at the pisser.
The Keurig.
Yeah.
It's at the Keurig.
At the urinal. When you're at the urinal, I hope we gave you something to talk about. Hope you enjoyed it. We're enjoying it. And if you didn't enjoy it, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Menace to society.